We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
Senator, it was a couple of years ago when you were catching some flack from the right and conservatives for what they saw as overly partisan rhetoric on your part. So I wonder how you answer the question, how much responsibility do Democrats like yourself bear for the gridlock in Washington?
I think what we saw in the last Congress was a very deliberate plan by the Republicans that they announced. So I'm just taking them at their word that the most important thing that they had to accomplish was to try to get President Obama not reelected. That was their number one goal as senators. That was Mitch McConnell said that publicly. And that in order to do that, they were going to be as difficult and obstructive as they could. They were going to deny the president any victories at all costs. That put them into a situation in which they were very reluctant, and I've seen it firsthand. There's lots of good bipartisan legislation that has been backed up because the Republicans don't want it to pass for fear that a Democrat would get credit.
But now that your party is in the minority in the Senate, aren't Democrats using many of the same tactics that they criticized Republicans for when the Republicans were the minority in the Senate?
Well, we'll have to see. The only bill we've really done in the Senate is the Keystone Pipeline bill, which was a zombie exercise from the very get-go because the president had announced that he was going to veto it. So why they spent all those weeks on a bill that was dead on arrival at the White House, I don't understand. I think that the Senate has moved to a point where on both sides there's an expectation that you have to clear 60 votes. And so that's, I think, going to be ordinarily the case. The one thing that Mitch McConnell has done that has been good has been that he has opened up for amendments to the bills that are on the floor, and that has allowed a much more robust floor process. We should have done that. We didn't. Mitch has, so I have to give him credit for that.
Let's go to Scott.
You know, the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement is slowly wending its way through and probably will end up in Congress. Now, given Rhode Island's problems, Governor Raimondo mentioned it again this week with losing manufacturing jobs. Is this really going to be a good deal for Rhode Island?
I am very suspicious of it. I've been to the Rhode Island factory floors and seen the holes in the concrete where they'd unbolted the machinery so they could ship it to a third world country and have it make the same product for the same customer with different workers. That is something that's unforgettable. I'm very skeptical of these. I think if you're dealing with Europe, where you have similar environmental requirements, similar labor requirements, similar worker safety requirements, okay. But when you're dealing with countries that are paying disgracefully low wages, that have no environmental protection, that are doing it on the cheap, and we're expecting our workers to try to compete with that, I think that's a lot of the reason that our manufacturing sector has been knocked down.
U.S. District Court Judge Mary Leacy is getting ready to retire, so I wonder if you and your colleague, Senator Jack Reed, have talked about who you might name as a successor recommend.
I'm going to miss Mary. We were part of the Claiborne Pell class. She was the judge. I was the U.S. attorney. But anyway, we have a process that we go through when we do this. We bring in folks who are interested. We interview them. There's a little bit of a screening first, and we try to pick somebody who will be very good on the court. Mary's done a good job, and I think the court will miss her, and we'll hope we can find a really strong replacement. Our most recent one, Jack McConnell, has done an outstanding job.
Just wondering, Rhode Island, the one big issue here has been the economy for a while. We know Jack Reed and the submarines. What have you done? What's the one, two, three things you've done in the last couple of years as a senator to bring jobs specifically and directly here to Rhode Island?
Because of the Environment Public Works role that I have, it's been mostly focused on infrastructure and pushing for these Tiger grants particularly that have allowed us to develop both Quonset with its new pier and its new crane, and Port of Providence still working on getting the cranes in place, but the money is there, and then doing the viaducts north and south. Those are very tangible things that have created real jobs and have been necessary from a point of view of economic development and infrastructure.
I wonder how you respond to the criticism from New York Times reporter James Risen that the Obama administration has, quote, been the greatest enemy of press freedom in a generation, end quote, because of its aggressive prosecution of leaks to the media.
Well, I don't know that I really want to take a side in that. I think that the Obama administration has gone after more leaks in the national security space than their predecessors. I think the target has more often than not been the actual leaker. And the vehicle to the leaker is to try to get the correspondent to say who they spoke to. I think they've backed off on that, and I think they were probably wise to back off on that. But it is a problem when everybody in the national security world thinks that they've got a right to go to the newspaper and disclose classified and covert programs that could very often put folks at risk who are working for us overseas.
To briefly follow up, you've been a lot more supportive than your progressive colleagues in supporting the Obama administration's surveillance program. How come?
I guess all those years on the Intelligence Committee, seeing both how real and immediate a lot of these threats are and how scrupulously safeguarded the surveillance programs are, gives you a slightly different perspective than if you're just taking it off the headlines.
Is there any hope out of this immigration morass, given the recent federal judge who put the brakes on Obama's policy? And given the House Republicans, is there really any way we get a compromise or get out of this?
I think there has to be. The House Republicans aren't going to like it, but I don't think the Republican Party can go into the 2016 election having done nothing about immigration, particularly with the example of our bipartisan Senate immigration bill that passed the Senate, that had good bipartisan support, that was widely supported by everybody from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to the labor unions to the Farm Bureau. They just can't get their act together in the House because of their extremists. But counter pressure is going to come from that November 16 election, and I think they're going to have to do something, and the Senate bill still sits there as a perfectly valid model if Boehner would simply take it up.
You're a co-sponsor of a Senate bill to lessen some of the excesses of what critics call the prison industrial complex, the mass incarceration of people, some for nonviolent crimes. The New York Times editorialized recently that your measure might do more to help white-collar criminals than the disproportionately minority drug offenders. How do you respond?
I don't think they're accurate about that. They didn't cite any evidence, and it was a little bit odd because a year ago they wrote an editorial completely in favor of the bill. It's based on experience that we have in Rhode Island using these risk assessment measures and programs so that when people are in the prison, they go through the programs and they're better equipped to not reoffend when they get out. The experience in Rhode Island has been that there has been no bias in favor of white-collar criminals and that it's been very beneficial for everyone. So I don't know where they got that. People who are going to get out of prison, we want to get out of prison with the capabilities and in a frame of mind that they aren't going to reoffend.
You're a former U.S. attorney and state attorney general. Why have states and the federal government taken so long to back away from the excesses of the drug war?
I think that actually there's just a certain amount of momentum to things. For a while, this was very politicized. And if you were soft on crime, it was a political attack against you. And I think the evidence took a while to develop that some of these ideas actually weren't working. They seemed like a good idea, three strikes and you're out. But if you're dealing with very minor offenses, it doesn't make sense any longer. We're now at a stage, which is, I think, really good news, where Republicans and Democrats are working together on a whole slew of bills. It's not just my bipartisan bill. There are three or four of them percolating in the Senate. And I'm hoping, I think mine's going to be the catalyst, but I'm hoping that we can pull them all together and get a comprehensive piece of sentencing and prison reform legislation done.
Should Speaker Boehner have invited Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu to speak to the House?
No, he should not have. I think it was really bad behavior, very mischievous. Helpful to Netanyahu to prop him up in his election. Helpful to the Speaker in his desire to basically do anything he can to annoy and harass the president, but really damaging to a long-term bipartisan relationship with Israel, which is really important because Israel is a very important outpost of the liberties that we Americans hold dear in a very tough neighborhood. American support for Israel is really important, and to take something that precious and just throw it into the politics bin, I think was a bad mistake by Boehner.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And U.S. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse.
My pleasure, Ian. Thanks for having me on.